Breadbox Media Programming is brought to you by...
I actually met my wife on CatholicSingles.com, if you can believe that.
Really?
Yes, I had never done that before. Didn't have any problems with dating.
Natalie and Aaron met on CatholicSingles.com after they realized that they needed to find someone who shared their faith. Meet other faithful Catholics on the original Catholic dating site. Download our app today for free. Looking for a way to build daily prayer discipline? Seen the rise in mindfulness meditation, but not sure if it is possible to meditate in a way that's consistent with your Catholic faith? Just looking for a way to breathe new life into your existing prayer routine? No matter what you're looking for, Hollow is here to help. Hollow is a Catholic prayer and meditation app that helps users deepen their relationship with God through audio-guided contemplative prayer sessions. From meditations on the daily gospel, to the rosary, to daily examines, Hollow has something for everyone. Hollow is the number one Catholic app in the U.S. It is free to download and has permanently free content, but you can also check out all of the premium sessions for 30 days, risk-free, by signing up at www.hollow.app/breadbox.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And with us this week, we have Anne Garrido. She's Associate Professor of Homiletics at Aquinas Institute of Theology in St. Louis, Missouri, where she previously directed the school's Doctorate of Ministry and Preaching Program. Anne has served as the Morton Faculty Fellow in Homiletics at the University of Notre Dame. She's the author of 7 books, including the award-winning Redeeming Administration and Redeeming Conflict. She travels nationally and internationally, helping communities talk about the topics they find toughest to talk about, conversations that always involve questions of truth. And today we'll be discussing her new book, Let's Talk About Truth, a guide for preachers, teachers, and other Catholic leaders in a world of doubt and discord. Welcome to the show, Anne.
Hey, thanks, Pete. I'm delighted to join you.
So, very interesting book, and it seems like the last couple interviews I've done with authors and books, though the intent was not around a virus pandemic, their books seemed very timely, and yours does as well.
In a strange way, I never expected. Yeah, it does.
So, as I said, it seems highly relevant. But when you were writing this, why was it important for you to write this book on truth?
I think for myself, truth has always been a question that's kind of followed me throughout my life. I've always had a lot of questions around truth. And then I found myself studying and then working within a Dominican school of theology and ministry. So I found myself within a religious community that was deeply devoted to the question of truth. And then just observing, kind of watching, if you want to say, the signs of the times and looking at what's happening with our own nation politically, what's going on now in terms of questions around science and how do we know what we know? It just seemed like the wider context in which we live was asking more and more questions around truth, and I wanted to sit and wrestle with them in a very conscientious way.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is just as a base and a foundation of where we go with this today. What is truth? I think defining that is somewhat important because now we hear things like, well, your truth doesn't match my truth. And so what is truth?
Sure. So what I was looking at when I was working was listening deeply to various ways in which people were using the word truth and recognizing that it's an umbrella word in our daily, the way we speak about it, at least in English, it's an umbrella word that covers a couple of quite distinctive different things. So there's multiple ways of defining the term. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the challenges that we face with each other is that we're actually using the word in very different ways in conversation that we have with each other. So I look at four different ways in which we use that word in everyday speech, and then look at what does our Catholic tradition have to say to us about practicing truth in each of these different zones or areas. So one way of thinking about truth, the classical definition of truth, would be the one that Thomas Aquinas uses, based actually on the work earlier of Aristotle, where he talks about truth as having a mind that's aligned with reality. So you want your what's in your brain to match what actually exists out in the world or out in the universe. But a second way that we use the word truth is that we use truth in terms of like evaluating our judgments or opinions or conclusions about how to live in the world, what to do about the realities that we face. And that's kind of like having a mind that's aligned with what's good. And as you've indicated a lot of times right now, it's like, well, you can't judge between opinions. Like all opinions have to be considered to be equal. Within the Catholic tradition, we do have some ways of thinking through the conclusions that we hold and recognizing some conclusions, some opinions are actually better than other opinions. And so like, what are the skills we need to be able to have those conversations? Mm-hmm. A third way we talk about truth is having a mouth aligned with your mind. So this is what Aquinas actually calls veracity or truthfulness. Like it's possible I could be entirely honest with what I'm saying out of my mouth, but my head is not connected to reality. And then it's also possible that my head could be connected to reality, but I might not say things out of my mouth that I actually believe, which is lying. And then the fourth way we talk about truth is being true. Like, what does it mean to be faithful in a relationship? Like, I've taken vows to my husband to be true to him in good times and bad, or for richer or for poorer, in sickness and in health. So that's another way of talking about truth. What does it mean to be true to somebody? Mm-hmm. And I think we need to have a really rich definition of truth. We need to look at all four of these different dimensions.
Mm-hmm. So let's drill down into each of those a bit. And we'll backtrack. So you laid out the four facets there that you discussed in the introduction. You cover them throughout the book. And the first one deals with, again, that lifelong struggle to perceive the world as accurately as possible, as you have it written in the introduction. How do we converse and share thoughts with someone who holds a different truth than we do, and have that ongoing conversation without it turning into conflict?
So what I do is I make a distinction between truth as having a mind aligned with reality, that kind of classical definition of truth, and then in the second chapter, as I mentioned, going a little bit more around different opinions, right? Mm-hmm. So when you say someone who holds a different truth than I do, are we talking there about someone who sees the world, like is actually reading facts, like that they hold different facts than I do? Or are we talking about someone who's arranged those facts in such a way to come to a conclusion around what we should do that's different than I do? Because on one hand, we don't have, within the Catholic tradition, we don't have alternative facts. So either the earth revolves around the sun or it does not. Either the earth is flat or it is not. Either the globe right now is warming or it is not. And so these are things which we are all called by way and by using our gifts of human reason. The Aquinas and the Catholic tradition following that is pretty confident about the capacity that people who have developed their capacities for reason can arrive at very similar pictures of what reality is, and that these are not necessarily matters for debate, right? Like if we don't have agreement in these areas, then what we keep doing is we study further, we get more data in order to understand the world as it exists better. Hmm. When you're talking about what do I do with people who hold different truths than I do, and we're talking about something like a judgment, an opinion,
mm-hmm.
like what we should do about global warming or what we should, what's the best path forward around handling the COVID-19 crisis. Some of us might think, oh, the best thing is to keep quarantine going for a long time. Mm-hmm. Some of us might think, no, the more important thing is getting the economy going. Those aren't questions of fact. Those are questions of judgment, and that requires a different skill set.
Mm-hmm.
So in Catholic tradition, for example, when we're talking about what would be the best thing to do, what would be the greatest good here, we would say, first, you need to make sure that whatever decision you make from here is well-grounded in fact, right? So having the facts matters a whole lot right now.
Mm-hmm.
But then we need to think also in terms of, we need to have a well-informed conscience. So reason alone isn't going to, it's really important here, but we also need to be attentive to the formation of our conscience, to being able to look through, for example, Catholic social justice principles and talk about, are we listening to the voice of those who are most impacted here?
Mm-hmm.
Like these kinds of skill sets and capacities, we need really great communication skills for discussing the fact that we might reason through, even people of really goodwill might come to different conclusions around stuff. And so how are we going to talk about that?
Mm. So the second one, and each one of these builds upon the last one, the second facet, as you describe it, watches over our struggle to interpret the happenings that are going on in our world and make sense of them. So the burning question, I think, nowadays is, where do we seek out this truth? Because it sure seems in the last 3 weeks that the truth that is promoted in some areas is misleading. So how do we know we have grasp of the truth?
Right. I mean, in some ways, this is the great epistemological challenge of all times, isn't it? But this is where, again, if we were to go back into that first, if I'm asking about the facts, like how many people actually have COVID-19,
mm-hmm.
how, like those are actually factual questions. We might not know the answers to them right now, but by pursuing reason and by as best as we're capable, trying to learn and study from good sources, people who have knowledge about such matters, people who've devoted their life to study about such matters, like these kinds of things are important for us because we're not going to be able to figure out a good judgment about a way forward if we can't agree on what actually is.
Mm-hmm.
And so being able to have some capacity of trust in those who have devoted their lives to studying reality, the sciences means like a disciplined pursuit of a particular area of reality. And the Catholic tradition actually has a really strong history. Now, they might say people bring up the story of Galileo aside, but the Catholic tradition has a really strong heritage of pursuing truth and recognizing the sciences as a way of pursuing truth, and recognizing that truth in the end is one, and that all persons of goodwill who are really genuinely trying to seek to know reality as it is eventually will end up in the same place.
Mm-hmm.
Not that we are all there yet,
mm-hmm.
Because reality is huge and there is always additional information that we do not know yet. But we can continue to really use our reason to seek it.
Mm-hmm.
And any effort that's out there that propagates fake news is sinful from a Catholic perspective.
Mm-hmm.
So saying something that you know not to be real and not being genuine in your own pursuit of trying to get at what's real leaves us in a space that has implications for our relationship with God.
Mm-hmm. Sure does. Now, the third facet focuses on our struggle to communicate with one another towards building up a society. That one, I think, is tough because it requires an open dialogue between two different people with two different truths or two different opinions. What's our best way to navigate those situations so that they can be fruitful and not break down?
Yeah. So this is the area of what I talk about in a previous book to this one called Redeeming Conflict. And it's trying to draw on what is the best research out there in terms of communication that help get conversations past a place of impasse. And there's a lot that's been learned in this field that can help us when we really do see things in different ways and feel like we're really stuck in a conversation and are trying to reach a new place. Some things that can really help in that regard is moving down what in the communications field is sometimes called the ladder of influence.
Okay.
So digging underneath the conclusions that people hold, the positions that people hold, to kind of ask a little bit more, what is the data from your own experience that's informing the way that you've come to the conclusion that you've come to? Because all of us have, since reality is so huge, all of us are only picking up pieces of reality at any mm-hmm. point in time. And it's important for me to understand what your experiences have been. What are the data points that you're relying to? What are the sources that you're drawing on? How are you interpreting those? How are you making sense of those to arrive at the conclusions that you hold? So I can always approach another person from a space of inquiry. Tell me a little bit more about how you've arrived at that conclusion. It sounds like this is really, really important to you. Say more about why. I can hear underneath that this stirs a lot of really strong feelings for you. What are you afraid might happen if we moved in this direction instead? What would be at stake for you? What would be lost? What would you be afraid of we as a whole community losing? So that's one way of just inquiring more in those conversations mm-hmm. is more fruitful than just debating back and forth and comparing our conclusions and arguing about them.
Good stuff.
Distinguishing also, I would say, a lot between intent and impact. It is possible I can have a really good intention in holding what I hold, but I'm not always aware of the impact that my, quote, truths are having on your life.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's possible to have really good intentions, and it's possible that we could be having a really bad impact, and we need to find out about those. And both of those we can hold at the same time. It's also possible when I've been really badly impacted by someone's convictions that I can begin to assume they have bad intentions, which oftentimes makes the conversation go nowhere.
Mm.
So those are some of the communication skills I rely on a lot.
That's some great advice. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be back more to discuss Let's Talk About Truth. You've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. We'll be right back.
Teachings for an Unbelievable World is a newly discovered work written by St. John Paul II, then Archbishop Karol Wojtyla of Krakow, in the years just after Vatican II. This is the first English language publication of this important work. In this hardcover book that Scott Hahn calls one of the greatest hidden treasures unearthed in our time, 13 brief homilies provide compelling teaching for Catholics in today's post-Christian world and give fresh insights into JP2's pontificate. You can get a copy of this important new book at Ave Maria Press. Use code JP2Teachings, that's JPII Teachings, to get 20% off your copy today.
Welcome back to Off the Shelf. Today we have with us Anne Garrido, and we're talking about her book, Let's Talk About Truth. And Anne, we covered the first three facts that you had in the beginning of the book and built the rest of the book upon. So let's finish up with the fourth one. And the fourth one considers our struggle to be true and in long-term relationships with each other, as you had mentioned back in the early part of the first segment. Why are relationships so important?
Well, I mean, from a Catholic perspective, we would say that God and God's very being is relationality. That's why we say, I mean, when we say God is Trinity, what we're saying is God and God's very being is relationship. And so for each of us who have been baptized in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit, what it's saying is, I am baptizing you into a life of relationship that is so deep that it is communion. I mean, mm-hmm. it's like, and so for us, there, like, relationship is everything, everything. And that our entire lives here on earth are like a boot camp for being able to live a Trinitarian life with God in heaven, like a life of communion. And the way that we learn how to do that is by being in our relationships that are here. And so it was interesting to me in doing research for the book to discover that the Hebrew word for truth, the word for truth from our ancestors in faith is the word emet, which it means what we've been talking about truth already, like something you can count on, something you can rely on, something that's sturdy and stable and trustworthy. But where it's really something that's good, something that's real, but what it's really talking about when we're talking about emet is something that's faithful, something that it's reliable, and that God over and over again in the Hebrew scriptures is spoken of as emet. And what it's talking about there is it's not just saying that God is giving you like a picture of reality. It's saying that God and God's very being is reliable. You can count on God. And even though we as human beings are not always trustworthy, we're not always faithful, God is always reliable in that way. So it's interesting because in contrast to the Hebrew word for lie, which is sheker, and they talk about when you look at the Hebrew language, the three letters that constitute the word sheker or lie, they stand on one place on the line, and you could push them over and they could topple over. But the three letters that comprise the word truth, these letters each touch the line when you write them twice. Like, you can't push this word over. It's stable. It's sturdy. And so it's a question for me, especially when we disagree with each other on so many different facets of truth, perhaps, how do we be true to each other?
Mm-hmm.
Even when we don't always see the world in the same way.
Right, right. You know, you raise an interesting point in the book, and there's a lot of them in the book, actually. I encourage everyone to get it. Does this even matter? Why is truth so important in what you refer to as our post-truth society? Because we're being conditioned unsuccessfully for most of us, but some of us are falling into this trap of believing this whole notion of, you know, what you believe is what you believe and it's right, and what I believe is right, that there's never anything wrong. We're in this feel-good society where there's never anything wrong. So why is it important to make sure the truth is out there?
I mean, at a very fundamental level, like if you really go dark on this, I don't believe that there is such a thing as a post-truth society. Because either we have truth or we're not going to exist as a society.
Mm-hmm.
So in the Catholic tradition, we talk about truth in that first realm, at least, as objective. And what that means is that that reality exists whether we like it or not. So if I'm in my apartment right now, if I am to jump, I may not believe in gravity, but if I jump off the ledge of my apartment, I am going to hit the ground at the same rate as somebody who does believe in gravity,
mm-hmm.
right? So reality is what it is. And in that way, reality is objective. But what we would also say when we talk about reality or truth being objective, it also means, as we were alluding to before, I may not have all the facts. Like, as one of my friends, a Dominican, says, reality is like a bazillion bolts of electricity, and most of us have like 60-watt brains, right? Like, I can't hold all of the reality that there is. And how do I live in reality? How do I thrive in reality? How do we as a culture and society thrive in reality? Those move into that question of the second chapter around how am I always striving to understand reality better and also understand what a flourishing how do I flourish in this reality well? And toward that end, I recognize that there's something that I never have the wholeness of it, and that I need to keep learning from other people. I need to keep learning additional facts. I need to learn about the pieces of reality that I don't know. It's never something that, truth is never something in the Catholic tradition that we would say that we've mastered. And so the question there is kind of like that twofold sense of objectivity. Now, when I say I don't know everything quite yet, that doesn't also mean that everything goes. I think a lot of times the concern, which I hear you raising around relativism in society, and that is a concern that I share, means that we can't in any way, shape, or form evaluate what is a better direction for our culture to head in than another. And so I talk in the book about three different kinds of tolerance that we might have. We definitely cannot abide by a tolerance for a diversity of fact. Like, that's just not livable. When I say there's no post-truth reality, that's what I'm talking about. We can't both believe that there is global warming and there's not global warming, right? We have to know about this and go in a particular direction, or we're going to end up fried. Mm-hmm. There's also a tolerance for preference. And I think most of us are pretty okay with relativism in that regard. Like, you know, I like lime-flavored LaCroix. My husband likes lemon-flavored. We can deal with that. It's a diversity of preference, and the world is going to go on just fine. Where we have the greatest degree of argument is going to be around kind of that, what do we do when we differ about things that really do make a difference to each of us?
Mm-hmm.
One of my friends was keen on saying, a difference that doesn't really make a difference isn't much of a difference. Right? But when there are things that make a difference to us, and it might be, for example, the question right now, do I go outside right now and begin to social gather or not? Do I get my child immunized or not? Like, these are things that have impact on other people. And what we're striving, like we do within our tradition, comes back again to a conscience, development of conscience. We do say some opinions on these matters are better than other opinions on these matters. We do have ways of striving toward the good. And how do we talk about that? Because just saying everything goes is going to have profound impact on people's lives. Because what you decide to do right now in this time of quarantine, it impacts more than just you, right? Mm-hmm. So how are we going to talk about those things? Mm-hmm. And relativism in that regard can't really be the answer. Mm-hmm. Me just saying, well, whatever you do is fine. It's not really fine by me because my life's going to be impacted.
Mm-hmm. Right. So how did we get here? Why is truth so elusive? And can things get any worse? Because they seem pretty bad right now when it comes to the whole relativism and that conversation we just had there.
I mean, there are days which I kind of get pretty depressed about the matter.
Mm-hmm.
As a Catholic, for me, writing this book and diving down deeper into our own heritage's way of thinking through some of these really tough questions, like reading Aquinas and what he had to say on these matters. Like I said, reading the literature on how to help people move through difficult conversations, reading the scripture and discovering God's fidelity to us in the midst of all of our struggles on these matters. These are things that give me a lot of hope. And doing the research that I did helped me come to a greater clarity, but also a greater sense of hope that we do have the tools that we need. It's just a question of whether we're going to actually use them and draw on them and engage them and commit ourselves to them. One of the passages that I ground the entire work around is from John chapter 3 when he's speaking with Nicodemus, when Jesus is talking to Nicodemus in the Gospel of John. And he says, those who live truth come to the light. So truth for me is not a thing, not a noun. It's a verb. It's a way of being in the world. And we need to, and so what I'm looking at throughout the text is, how do we practice truth? Like, what does it mean to practice truth in terms of seeking, pursuing scientific knowledge around reality, trying to get a picture of reality? What does it mean to practice truth in conversations when we have different opinions? What does it mean to practice truth by not lying, by committing that every word that comes out of my mouth, gosh darn it, as much as able, I am going to try to make sure that's connected with reality. And how do I be true, even with people who I radically disagree with in this moment in time? How do I be faithful? My husband and I have been stuck in our apartment now for 5 weeks. And we're sitting, it's just the two of us. We're looking at each other. We've run out of things to talk about. What does it mean right now to continue to be true to each other in this moment in time? So I wanna turn truth into a verb for us right now, because I think that's what will give us the most hope.
So I guess the one part of the book that you include these homily prompts or homilies. So how it's obviously, you know, a section geared towards pastors, and that's part of your subtitle. So how could a priest go about using this book to be able to further the truth, and what tools are in it that they can use?
Yeah, I think one of our greatest challenges has been of late when I hear, because my own field, my own discipline is homiletics and preaching, and public speaking. So I find the way that we've communicated our own Catholic teaching about truth to be problematic from a homiletic point of view. Oftentimes I think we've spoken about truth only as a noun, and we haven't really accessed the richness of our tradition that looks at truth as a verb that has equipped people to be able to live truth, to be able to do truth, practice truth in daily life. And so I wanted to draw kind of on what are some of the best practices in homiletics that could help us to translate this tradition into everyday language better. That's something that I'm always trying to do as a public speaker and as someone who, you know, is preaching on scripture on a regular basis. So it was something that I've studied a lot, and I wanted to try to help priests and deacons and people who are leading liturgy of the word and RCIA classes and just, and even teachers I see as preachers in some ways, to help them figure out, how do I communicate some of these ideas in a clear and accessible way?
So we covered a lot. Is there anything I missed in this interview you'd like to share with people who haven't gotten the book that you think is important?
I guess just to have courage, huh? Take courage. And that my dream for the book is that it would help preachers and teachers, but that it really would help all Catholic readers who are finding themselves in these kinds of conversations around truth, maybe just with their own, you know, uncle or on Facebook, you know, or something like that, to be able to help think through them, and so that they feel a little bit less knotted, and give them a, give people a framework just for beginning to have the conversation. And if that happens, then at least I will have some consolation that I feel like I've at least played my part in trying to create a culture where truth is a virtue that's highly valued again.
Good stuff. Where can people find your book, Let's Talk About Truth, A Guide for Preachers, Teachers, and Other Catholic Leaders in a World of Doubt and Discord?
Well, right now it's on Amazon has deeply reduced their e-book readers, e-readers sales, so I know it's on Amazon. Ave Maria Press is my publisher. They have some great discounts there, too, on their website. There's a great spring sale going on. So those are probably the two places I generally turn to buy books.
All right. Anne, thanks so much for taking time out of your schedule and spending with us. Any closing thoughts?
Pete, thank you. It's been a delight to meet you.
Well, it's same here. And with that, you've been listening to Off the Shelf here on Breadbox Media. I'm your host, Pete Sox, a Catholic book blogger. And until next time, God bless.
Teachings for an Unbelievable World is a newly discovered work written by St. John Paul II, then Archbishop Karol Wojtyla of Krakow, in the years just after Vatican II. This is the first English language publication of this important work. In this hardcover book that Scott Hahn calls one of the greatest hidden treasures unearthed in our time, 13 brief homilies provide compelling teaching for Catholics in today's post-Christian world and give fresh insights into JP2's pontificate. You can get a copy of this important new book at AveMariaPress.com. Use code JP2Teachings, that's JPIIteachings, to get 20% off your copy today. Looking for exceptional coffee delivered fresh to your door? We have the answer. Our friends at Grim Bean Coffee produce small batch artisan coffee using top-tier coffee beans. The coffee is roasted when you order, guaranteeing the freshest coffee possible. Check out Breadbox Roasts, a new line of Catholic-themed coffees available at www.grimbeancoffee.com/breadboxmedia. Experience coffee like never before.